IT transformation calls for true collaboration between cross-functional teams, from leaders to developers. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
The 9/11 attacks showed the need for better data and information sharing among federal agencies and between governments. 17 years later, there's still room for improvement. The IBM Center for the Business of Government and Harvard conducted two roundtable discussions on the topic of data sharing and threat detection, one in the United States and one in Europe. Retired Air Force Brigadier General and former Homeland Security Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis, Frank Taylor, spoke with Tom Temin.
I go back to 9/11 and the notion that we had to connect the dots. And it seems to me back then we didn't understand how technology would change in the last 17 years. And so rather than connecting the dots, it's connecting billions of dots, not only within the U.S. and data that we have access to, but the data of our partners. So I think the challenge is continuing to integrate the explosive amount of data that is coming into our hands in a way that allows us to make instantaneous decisions about threats and people that could threaten our country.
I guess it's almost as if human intelligence is on the same analog trajectory it was on, whereas signal intelligence, broadly defined, has really exploded.
Well, it's not. I think it's more than signal intelligence. I think it's the sources of intelligence. Social media is not collected in terms of signals intelligence, but it provides data, travel data, financial transaction data. All of this data helps us better understand how people who have bad intent may move across the world and try to move into our country. So it's the combination of all that data and respecting privacy, civil rights, civil liberties, respecting the information of our foreign partners that share with us in terms of their privacy regimes, all makes that all very complicated.
Yes, the report that came out of these discussions mentioned the need to maintain the public's trust in the government having data, even though a lot of that data that you mentioned comes from sources you wouldn't necessarily consider as part of the national security apparatus.
But none of this happens if the public doesn't trust the government and how the government uses the data. There has to be a shared responsibility on the part of the government to protect privacy, civil rights, and civil liberties while using that data to develop leads and intelligence that allows us to go after bad guys. But the public needs to know that this is transparent and open and that it's not being used for nefarious purposes.
So is there a way for some of these data sources to be brought into the threat intelligence landscape, if you will, and still maintaining that trust and all of those privacy protections?
I think it's about transparency. I'm very, very excited about the creation of the National Vetting Center at CBP or in the Department of Homeland Security. And I urge everyone involved in that effort to be as transparent as possible in terms of what the center will do, where it will get its data, and how that data will be used, and to periodically report to the public the effectiveness of their efforts at protecting Americans and protecting our way of life.
We're speaking with Frank Taylor, retired Air Force Brigadier General and former Homeland Security Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis. And when you were at Homeland Security, what were some of the gaps you felt that you wish you had the data to fill some of the gaps in knowledge and understanding of the threat situation?
Well, what I found in my 3 years at Homeland Security is that there's a tremendous amount of data sitting in DHS. We publicly talked about 900 separate databases across the entire department that were not integrated. So our focus was on trying to begin the process of integrating those data sets that were critical to help us understand where threats were coming from, be it CBP, be it ICE, be it CIS. into a data lake that will allow us to exploit that data more effectively as we made decisions about vetting for benefits for folks coming into our country.
And the applications that would play off of that lake, that data lake, could they conceivably have the rules built in? I guess that's the idea behind all of these artificial intelligence engines, to make sure that the legal protections would be invoked automatically.
Correct. So our attorneys were at the table, our privacy experts, our civil rights and civil liberties experts were all a part of the process of how we pull this together. And I would tell you, it's not easy. But it can be done with transparency and all of the right players being at the table.
And when it comes to international data sharing, I guess the problems become compounded. What are some of the things that the panelists discussed with respect to, you know, cross-Atlantic and cross-Pacific sharing?
Well, certainly the privacy and data protection rules of our, let's say, our partners in Europe make a challenge in how that data that is shared with us can be used, and the trust that we have to have with them that we're not going to use the data in a way that is inconsistent with their laws or their commitment to their own citizens. And so all of that has to be integrated into the processes that we create that allows us to use that data, but also gives them transparency in how that data is being used. And you know, I don't think we can ever say there won't be a mistake. There will be a mistake, hopefully not for nefarious purposes. But when there is a mistake, let's address it openly and honestly in terms of how it happened, and let's improve the system. But I'm convinced that we know everything we need to know about people who threaten our country, threaten our partners, and it's sitting in data that is disintegrated across our partners. And the extent to which we can fix that is the extent to which we can get ahead of this threat vector and be able to interdict it in a way that is legal and consistent with the laws of our country and international law.
Because I'm thinking in some ways the bloodlines of data cross, for example, with all of the facial recognition and other biometric data for international travel that CBP is experimenting with in airports. There's a lot of data from people outside of the United States, foreigners, that might
correct.
Be protected under different laws.
Correct. And there's law enforcement data. There is financial transaction data, all of which is available. But how that data becomes integrated and for what purpose, for a legal purpose, I think is a challenge that faces us. And that's really what our two roundtables are trying to focus on, or what are the things that will allow us to continue to push forward as more and more and more data becomes available to help us better understand the threats and risks that we face.
And did the subject of the legal framework or action by Congress potentially come up?
Well, not specifically, although, you know, when one's dealing with this type of a process, there has to be a legal framework, not one, in my view, that can be legislated as much as regulated through a legal privacy, civil rights, civil liberties prism that allows those factors consistent with our law to be applied to the processes that we develop.